This is Emergency FD Storyline.
It basically is like a buildup of constant, abnormal, massive stress situations. We're not talking about, oh my gosh, am I going to be able to pay my bills? Or, oh wow, I just, you know, wrecked my car. How am I going to take care of this? I've seen 5 dead people this week. I heard some kid screaming for her dad, and her dad's been shot dead. Just worked a kid, you know, cardiac arrest, who got beat to death by his dad with an extension cord. I think that there's a huge lack of understanding that it's not a bad thing or the emasculating thing if you go and talk to someone.
When the job gets too real, when you can't take any more, when you can't turn it off, post-traumatic stress, everyone experiences on the job. Post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, is another thing. This is personal. Been there. The views expressed on this program are from the guest and the host and do not necessarily represent the views of any government agency, private company, or public service. Emergency FD Storyline's focus is to tell the stories of those in the fire service and to highlight what matters to our first responders. I'm your host, Tom Mann. I get the phone calls. I have the frank conversations. I have a son who works in the fire service. And I want to mention again, the views expressed on this program are from the guest and the host, father and son. And this interview's purpose is to start the conversation. If you need help, don't put it off. Seek out professional help. In my last podcast, The Making of a Firefighter, I spoke with my son about his story. I continued my discussion about the reality of the job. This is part 2 of an interview with my son, Memphis firefighter Thomas Mann Jr. I call it the reality of the job. When your cup runs over, that's our storyline. So with me is my son, Thomas Russell Mann Jr. He's, I would say, young guy still. I got a phone call from you. I guess it was after I found out that another firefighter had committed suicide. And you made a comment to me. I don't know if you remember what you said, but you told me, or is it the past 2 years?
Year and a half.
How many individuals, and most of them, I guess, were kind of your peers, your age, have lost their lives to suicide?
4 that I know really well, and then 1 that I just kind of knew.
But that's 4.
4.
And then when you think about that, and then you have 1 you kind of knew. Yeah. That's still 5. And there's so many pressures, so many things going on. The job itself is very difficult. I had someone tell me in one of my last interviews that it's not uncommon. One of the interviews I did with retired Lieutenant George Langston, who survived to an active shooter, he suffered with a lot of survivor's guilt. We were talking about that, not only from being the only guy who survived, one of the two, but he had a lot of guilt with that, and he dealt with that for a while. They're not wanting to live anymore. He wanted to hang it up. He was done. You hear that, and then sometimes I wonder, especially for the guys, even like you, that are a lot younger, don't have the years of perspective with it. I know now I think you're getting a little bit of that, but why do you think there's such an issue going on now, probably more than before?
I mean, it's not something that's new.
No, it's not new.
It's been going on, you know, back in World War II and World War I, they called it shell shock. Now, you know, they went on with calling it post-traumatic stress disorder. Now they're just calling it traumatic stress disorder or whatever they're calling it now. But it basically is like a buildup of, you know, constant, abnormal, massive stress situations. We're not talking about, oh my gosh, am I going to be able to pay my bills? Or, oh wow, I just, you know, wrecked my car. How am I going to take care of this? This is, you know, well, I've seen 5 dead people this week. I heard some kid screaming for her dad, and her dad's been shot dead. Just worked a kid, you know, cardiac arrest, who got beat to death by his dad with an extension cord. And the dad didn't really care. He just wanted to make sure he wasn't going to get in trouble. You see that stuff. You see the darkness of humanity. You see the other side of humanity, the evil side of it. Learning how to properly rationalize all of the thoughts and cope with that. So 2 of my friends were Air Force. So 1 was active duty with me. And he ended up just, he shot himself. And for him, I think it just kind of boiled over finally with him because I think he and his wife were having some problems. The other one I deployed with, he was actually a higher rank, really cool guy, but he was a reservist, Air Force reservist. And his day job, he was a, he had over 2 decades. So he was a homicide detective. And, you know, so he had seen lots and lots and lots. And then last year, which is the first one in the string, was a firefighter that was in my academy class. I had literally seen him, you know, probably about a week prior. We worked a double shooting together. He's a paramedic. Another one, it's almost a similar situation, but one of the guys who's on my shift, at a different house. So he took 2 hours emergency leave, and when he went home, he ended up going and grabbing a gun, and he shot himself. And he had a kid, detective. He had 3 kids. I have another guy. I didn't know him very well, but similar thing. He was having, you know, issues at home. I really personally, like looking at it, I think that that's not just something that happens. Someone doesn't just wake up and go, oh, I'm going to blow my brains out today. You know, it doesn't work like that. It's a built-up thing. And going back to the built-up stressors, I think that there's a huge lack of understanding that it's not a bad thing or the emasculating thing if you go and talk to someone. And I'm not talking about talking to your significant other. Talking to a professional. I think I've been fortunate that you kind of raised me in a way that I know, you know, hey, you don't have to be the tough one. Sometimes it's better to ask for help or wear your SCBA mask on a car fire, yeah. Even if you're going to get made fun of because I don't want to get cancer, or wear your SCBA, you know, a little bit longer into overhaul and stuff.
I've said this to you all the time because I've experienced some of the things on the job. Although I wasn't a firefighter, I wasn't a paramedic or an EMT.
You're still seeing it all?
I've seen it all. I mean, I've seen the gunshots. I've seen things that I never wanted to see. I went through a post-traumatic stress thing about 10 years ago. And having dreams and things that I saw, things that I experienced, things that got exaggerated in my mind. Working with investigations and finding out how somebody died and then dealing with the families. And I got involved with things like that, and that really messed with you when you found out you could even talk about something you knew. You had to keep it inside. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about one of my interviewees, which was George Langston, I keep talking about because the incident I went to when that he survived, I remember the things I saw there. I got to the point I got numb after that. I couldn't describe what I saw. Those kinds of emotions I felt, actually, as you get older, they really affect you. And I've talked with more guys that have retired that talk about how things are coming back, and they even say, I don't know how I made it out of this situation. I have nightmares about it. They never had any when they're on the job. But all of a sudden, when you're away from it, it bothers you. I got to the point I actually stopped doing what I was doing because I couldn't take it anymore. That's what I remember. Mm-hmm. I've always tried to tell you to, first of all, talk about it. You'll call me up with how many shootings you had, or...
I can't count.
Yeah, now you can't count. And then... had the guy that was shot multiple times. How do you explain that to somebody? And the guy's still talking, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you get back there. You know, no big deal. You know, and yeah. you have to joke about some of the things that are, if the word's irreverent, talking about situations, but you have to laugh at them. You have to deal with it. You have to cope with it.
You know, when people ask me, like, what's it really like, you know, being a firefighter? They're like, you know, are there any TV shows or anything? Obviously, I'm going to tell them Ladder 49. That's a pretty accurate depiction of the fire service. I'm not even really going to talk about Backdraft because it's...
No, it's not real.
Anyway, it's not realistic. But, of course, that's the firefighter movie. But you got Ladder 49 and then Rescue Me. The series Rescue Me.
Right.
Directly ties into this discussion we're having. You know, through the series, you literally see him losing his mind. You know, the character... was at 9/11. He lost, you know, the majority of the people that was on his company. that is an accurate depiction. Once you've been on this job long enough to where you've seen enough, that desensitizing effect is just a natural response. It's 100% natural. Especially big city fire departments, and your paramedics, you know, that are on your services, EMTs that are on these ambulance services that are running, you know, all these calls constantly. Absolutely 100%. You do become like emotionally numb to stuff, but the problem lies is not really that in itself, but it's the fact that you just dealt with, you know, three shootings in one day and a cardiac arrest and some kid that got hit by a car and might not make it, or some kid that got, you know, in a car wreck and, you know, the parents don't have them buckled in or in a car seat or anything. They get flung out and now they're dead, you know, and then you just go home like nothing happened.
And then, then you have to resume life normally and react normally.
Yes.
It's hard to talk to like your wife or anyone else about this. How do you explain that to somebody? I used to tell the stories of stuff that I was seeing, and I would have people look at me like I was nuts. What I was telling them was almost too unbelievable to believe because it sounded like a lie.
It sounds like something in a horror movie.
Yeah. And
it's a reality.
It's a reality.
I can remember I went to my wife's, you know, 10th whatever high school reunion. And I don't know, I was talking to some guy there. And there were some firefighter friends of mine that are up here in Southern Illinois from when I was still a volunteer that I knew that were at this reunion. But I was talking to this guy. He had nothing to do with EMS, nothing to do with firefighting. And I started telling him a story that I thought was funny about my very first cardiac arrest. It was a guy that was a drowning victim. And some random bystander, I guess, saw me cut the guy's shirt off so I could put pads on him. The bystander came up and just pulled down the guy's pants. So I told this story, and I thought it was funny. The guy literally goes, yeah. Okay, I'm going to go get another drink over at the bar. And I was like, okay, well, I'll see you in a second. I never saw him the rest of the night.
Well, how do you explain that? How do you explain that kind of thing?
That's one of the crazy things about it. Like, I'll even see some of my friends, you know, that I've known all my life. And, you know, they're not firefighters. So then when I go to a party or something and, you know, they're like, I bet you see a lot of stuff. And then you just kind of say, yeah, shootings, stabbings, you know, all this stuff. And they're like, really? Like, how often is it? I'm like, I don't know, probably two or three dead people set, something like that. And they're like, what? Yeah, like two or three dead people, you know, in three shifts. I mean, it's not uncommon. Sometimes it's more. And they just kind of look at you like, oh, my gosh. Or, you know, I'll tell like something that I think is maybe PG rated. And they'll just go, oh my gosh, that happens? And you're like, dude, all the time. What are you talking about? You know, because it's a normal reality for you. But for other people, I mean, if they get dropped off in your reality and just, you know, sink or swim method, your average person is just going to go, you know, get shell-shocked before they've even seen hardly anything at all. They're just going to stop operating. And they're going to go, nope, not for me, and turn their stuff in, you know, and quit. It takes a special person to put yourself in this position anyway, but then once you're in the position, the problem right now, I think, even still with the fire service, is it's a male-oriented, even for females in the service.
Yeah.
A lot of them are the same way. But it's like a male macho-driven career field. It is. So, and with that male macho thing, you have the same problem that the military has, and that in lies eventually being a post-traumatic stress disorder. I mean, everybody has post-traumatic stress that's in, you know,
right.
It's a first responder or in the military, you know, that's, you know, seen combat or worked in the medical side and, you know, the military. But it becomes a disorder when you do nothing to properly try to work through it. And the ironic thing with it is a lot of times you don't even realize that anything's happening. So the best analogy I can give is when your cup runneth over, you know, you got this little, you know, teacup. And you're slowly adding, you know, a bunch of crap to it. And, you know, here's another dead person. Here's another family destroyed. Here's another house that just got destroyed. Now this kid has no toys. Here's another person's only vehicle that just got destroyed, which doesn't sound like much. But, I mean, those are compounding stressors. And eventually it gets so full to the point where it just overflows. And what happens then? What happens is something with you is going to go wrong. You know, now you're the one having an issue. And I can tell you when I definitely knew that I needed to start talking to a professional was after I had this terrible nickname on the fire department. You know this, but I still got to say it. It's, and again, this is a humor thing. This is a fire department humor thing because it is ironic and it's funny. It's a joke off of irony, which is awful. So the person's going to, people who are going to be listening to this are going to be like, oh my gosh, that was his nickname. It didn't hurt my feelings. Okay. I'm just letting, want to clarify that now. I was not offended. I was known as Baby Killer. And the reason I was known as Baby Killer was because I had 3 cardiac arrests over a 4-shift span. And then I had just a massive amount of pediatric patients, which is extremely rare for us, even on Memphis Fire Department, to have just an incredible amount of pediatric patients. It was me and this other paramedic. Together, we were peds magnets. I had, you know, 1 cardiac arrest on a child that was because she had been sick for over a month. This is way before COVID, so it's not COVID people, but she had been sick for over a month, probably had pneumonia that had developed, and the parents just never took her to the you know, to the doctor. They probably thought that she was going to get over it. It was just a thing. The thing with children is, you know, their bodies compensate really well. So it'll seem like they just have a normal illness or they just have a regular old cold, and then out of nowhere they'll crash and they'll just die. The number one cause of pediatric cardiac arrest is respiratory arrest. So this kid, she was sitting there sort of talking, sort of, you know, only able to get a couple words out at a time, and then she just passed out right there. That's when we loaded her to the unit, and then when we got her on the cardiac monitor, she's in VFib right now. So she's a cardiac arrest. That's not normal. Then the very next shift, we show up for a pediatric cardiac arrest. The kid didn't have a shirt on. You could see in the bathroom there was like shampoo bottles and stuff and body wash bottles and all like all over the place. It looked like a struggle had gone on. And the only people there was this kid and this stepdad. Anyway, the stepdad kept changing the story while we're there trying to work on this guy. And he kept hollering at us and we're doing everything, okay? I mean, it's a kid. We're doing everything. And this guy, at first I thought he was just a concerned parent. But then later on, we got in the back of the ambulance and I flipped him over to just look at his back to see if there wasn't something we missed. When I did that, this kid's back looked like the Passion of the Christ. I mean, he had scars at multiple layers of multiple stages of healing where it looked like he had literally been getting whipped. I mean, that's not normal. I kept having calls like that. So I got that terrible nickname, which is an awful nickname, but it's also funny because, I mean, it was one of those things. I was like, dude, another one, another one, another one. And, you know, thy cup runneth over. I got to a point where I just had this, I ended up one night, I had a dream. And I woke myself up moaning, which is weird. But the dream that I had was that I was in my bed. I don't know. Somebody said something like, you know, your child's dead or something like that. I woke up and as clear as I'm looking at you right now, I look over towards my wife and I see our brand new baby, our second child, dead on the bed, you know, as an infant. And then I closed my eyes, opened my eyes again, and it was gone. And I was like, whoa, you know. Okay, yep, I'll go ahead and start talking to somebody. Because I was like, that ain't good, that ain't right.
You know that's not normal. You know what I mean? It is a normal life. It is normal life because it happens. But to the degree yeah. that you have to deal with it every day.
It's normal for us.
Right.
Which is crazy when you think about it.
And then you get desensitized to it. You have 100%. To. In a way, you have to. You have to be able to cope with that because it's so tragic. But then you have to step back and then you see that it is affecting you, even mm-hmm. though, you know, some, I don't know, there are individuals I've seen that act like it doesn't bother them.
Macho.
And what I've noticed, I guess, through the years is some of these same individuals, when they're off duty, it's alcohol, they're doing something to avoid or to deaden the pain inside, or they're not able to handle their emotions, yeah. or they just bottle it up completely, and at some point, they just explode. And then we're talking about the things with the suicide. Sometimes I wonder, the cup's full. I can't even handle this right now.
Can't handle a normal life
situation. A normal life situation.
An argument with your wife or your girlfriend.
Which is normal. Two totally. Different people. And so you just end it. because it's part of the pain. You know, when you think about that, you need to get help. There is a big macho thing. It's a superhero complex. Mm-hmm. Had a retired firefighter who I would say is a real superhero talk about this, that he felt guilty about the people he didn't save. If we'd gotten there a minute earlier, that person would survive. Feels responsible for people dying that shouldn't have died, or they didn't get to the fire quick enough. They didn't help this. And I hear this pattern over and over again. I think sometimes when they're on the job, they seem to cope well, but then all of a sudden when they get off the job, they come apart. They really mm-hmm. come apart.
You know, I go to a specialist for, you know, post-traumatic stress. I mean, it's not on a regular basis. It's usually when I just am like, yeah, I've run some jacked up, you know, crap lately. Maybe I should go talk to this dude again. So then you just unpack stuff. And that macho attitude, I mean, it's so prevalent all across the board for cops, fire, EMS, nurses. People always, you know, don't include nurses, but they're seeing the same crap. It's just we button it up a little bit before we get the patient there. But and then the military side of it, they do think that they can handle it. And yeah, you can handle it, but how long are you going to be able to handle that? It's literally thy cup runneth over. It's like if you were to put a bucket underneath, you know, some sort of leak through a roof and you're trying to hold it up with your hand. I mean, it's real light to begin with, but the more that gets built up on it, your hand's not going to be able to hold it anymore and your hand's going to get tired. That's the same thing that happens with you emotionally, mentally, and physically. As you get to that point where you're just like, dude, no, I can't do this anymore. The only way you're not going to get to that point is if you unpack it, is if you go talk to somebody. And that's the way to stay mentally and emotionally and spiritually healthy. I'm very fortunate, and I'm glad that I'm blessed to have, I don't know if it's, you know, instilled from you. I think it is definitely in part, but at the same time, I have had some great leaders above me be able to tell me, don't be an idiot, go talk to somebody. Don't be an idiot, go talk to somebody. You know, you're talking to some of the people that I've heard you talking to. Those guys are legends. Yeah. on the fire department. When you have some greats like that, that, you know, are considered some of the great, that, you know, even people who have been on the department for 2 years know those names, they're sitting there saying that, then, you know, people should stop being stupid. The same thing can be applied to, you know, wearing your proper PPE. Yeah. And, you know, nothing's more frustrating to me than when people sit there and make fun of someone else for wearing something that's going to protect them. That's infuriating to me, especially when I have other people I'd consider some of the originals and the greats that say, don't be stupid. I've heard that from four different people. Don't be an idiot. Don't be stupid. Wear your stuff. I wish I would give it
to you for a reason.
Yeah. And
there are people that have learned from that.
And who cares what any of these people say? If they sit there and make fun of you for putting your SCBA on, who cares? Put it on. If they're going to make fun of you for sitting there and admitting the fact that you go talk to somebody to try and unpack your junk, forget it, dude. Don't listen to them. That's all I can really say is just, you know, it's about your health. It's not about their opinion. You shouldn't care what their opinion is. As long as you know you're doing your job, that's just going to make you better at your job if you're wearing your equipment and you're unpacking your emotional junk. Because that is exactly what you said earlier. I think every single one of those could have been avoided if they would have just kind of unpacked. Another interesting thing about those, each of them, it was some sort of life stressor, a normal life stressor that sent them over the edge. You know, they didn't have a bad call on the job, then just go home and off themselves. No, something happened at home. You know, you already don't have a lot of control on your job. You know, what you're going to see, what the outcomes of the calls are. You know, if you're able to save someone, if you're not able to save someone, you know, that kind of stuff. You don't have control over that. So the one place that you want to have control over, which is your home life, and then something happens that destabilizes your stability. I think that's how these guys have gotten to that point. That's a shame.
I remember the years I started out involved with this, they didn't have any of the counseling and any of the understanding of the post-traumatic stress. It's kind of like, you're a firefighter, you can handle it. If you can't, you need to get off the job. There are people back in the day that I can remember almost were the point of exploding on the job. They were just really messed up. I would run into them in a private situation outside the job. They were usually drunk, and they would talk about how they were fine. And I'm like, you're not fine. There's something wrong with you when you have to do those things, or they had to get involved with something like that, or they're doing something destructive, you know, even off the job, or they were so bottled up, they couldn't cope. Their, like, family relationships had totally fallen apart. They'd come back to the job, and, oh, yeah, they could perform their duties on the job, but off the job, they were almost falling apart. Mm-hmm. The fire department you work for at Memphis, they have a pretty good program with critical incident stress debriefing.
So Memphis Fire Department does have a CISD program. Anytime you have some sort of just insane call, any sort of pediatric-related stuff, say it's, you know, a house fire where, you know, you pulled out someone, or some crazy car wreck where someone's just, you know, mutilated, anything that's out of the norm, you can request a critical incident stress debriefing. You'll have a number of mental health professionals show up, usually a chaplain, and then they'll get all the companies involved, and they'll invite them to partake. You're not required to do it, but I would definitely advise you to. I can remember, you know, with the kid got beat to death with the extension cord, and he had the scars on his back. One of the guys that I ended up working with later, that was his very first time seeing a dead person, and it was a kid. My fantastic lieutenant at the time, Frankie Busby, he ended up calling the CISD. He did that. I can recall him doing that 5 times. But that's an example of someone who was like, yep, let's unpack our stuff. And that starts the process with it. Everybody wants to partake in it. Who was on the call, literally recount the incident. We talk about details that happened, kind of put the pieces together. Everybody can kind of tell what they saw. It's like, I just happened to glance and look in the bathroom. So I knew, you know, there was a struggle of some kind, and we're able to piece stuff together. And it's extremely helpful, especially when you see the faces in the room that were on this call with you, and everybody's in the same room talking about it. Number one, you relate to it because you do the same job. Number two, you really relate to it because you're on the same call. And number three, you guys are participating in this unpacking session. So it really is a fantastic program. I would say that that in itself is not enough, that you need to go and, you know, talk to a professional on a regular basis. I'm not talking about like weekly or whatever. I'm saying like even if it's once a quarter or something, or after you have some sort of crazy call, do your CISD, you know, after the crazy call, and then make an appointment with, you know, your mental health, you know, specialist. That's exactly how this unpacking method works, you know, with going and getting counseling and talking about these calls, just taking an emotional load off of it. Just because you don't really have to just hold it in anymore. Now, for some reason, it's just out.
You know, you and I have this, and you were raised, not only raised with it, but, you know, my faith in my God, believing in something bigger than myself, a way to cope with living in a fallen world, things are messed up. How has your faith helped you with this? And I know you've had troubles yourself with different things. We all have. Does that really play a role with you or help you? You and I share this faith in Christ, and has that been a big difference for you?
Pivotal. It's like the center of it. It definitely keeps like a certain grounding, because, you know, we've discussed this before, but you hear this in the fire service all the time, but it takes a different amplitude when you bring God into the picture. But it's not your emergency. It's whoever's emergency you're responding to. You're just there to try to fix it. It's not your fault. It's not anything that you caused. Everything happens for a reason. You have to keep in mind that human nature is inherently evil. And that's simply because of the fact that we have sin. How you're raised and the compass that you've been given through your life experiences on whether or not you choose to exercise that sin or to not sin. You know, everybody lies. At some point you steal.
You hate. You get angry.
Yeah.
You blow up.
Absolutely.
You know, we all do that.
Hold grudges. Say some things that you absolutely regret that you really don't mean, but you just want to hurt somebody, so you say it. The difference between knowledge of good and evil, and we have that knowledge, but unfortunately, there's a huge mass amount of the public that has the knowledge, but they don't care. The reason we go to so many shootings is because people shoot each other over stupid things. He disrespected me. I don't like the fact that he stepped over on my block. He belongs on his block. Even though the convenience store's like on that guy's block and he needs to get some groceries. The guy's a gang member, so the other gang member kills him. You know, we run to that sort of stuff. Pediatric cardiac arrest, like I was just talking about. You have to be grounded and understand that God has a plan and a purpose for everything. God's not the one killing these people. I want to clarify that. And then at the same time, these, you know, pediatric cardiac arrests, a lot of times it's not someone's fault. Unlike the guy, you know, I went to two of those that were similar where the kid got beat to death. You have to understand that either it's caused by inherent evil or it's just time. It's that person's time. Why? I don't know. I don't think that's our right to know. I don't think it's anything that we can possibly understand. You have to put yourself in a position where you understand that it's not your fault. It's that time for that person. You know, even if it's a small infant and it's a SIDS case, which I've been on a number of those. Why? I don't know. But you can't get hung up with the fact that that shouldn't happen. I mean, it shouldn't happen, but it does. But you can't get hung up with that thought of trying to rationalize it. You can't rationalize it. All you can do is try to talk about it, talk about how screwed up it is, how awful it is, and then don't run away from the emotional aspect of it. And, you know, I've talked about this with my guy I talked to, you know. My thing that I have an issue with is I empathize a lot. I do that with like patients, you know, that aren't even dying. You know, you got someone who's just having a hard time, you know, tough on the luck, and they're just having a bad run in life. And I get this like an emotional response where I'm putting myself in their shoes and how they would feel. You know, I remember this one, there's three kids. The dad got shot by their father's girlfriend over Popeye's chicken at the dinner's table. I can't make this up. He got shot and killed because of disagreement over Popeye's chicken. She pulled out a gun and shot him. And it was in front of one of the kids. The other two kids were upstairs. Killed him. And then she stayed on scene. I can't even explain this stuff to people. Again, you tell people this stuff and they're like, seriously? That sounds like you're making it up. You had the kid that was actually upstairs that wasn't even there. She's crying in the background. You know, me and my buddy Blake, my paramedic that I run with, you know, a lot. We're sitting there and this girl screaming in the background going, "Where's my daddy? Where's my daddy? I want to see my daddy." I just start thinking about the impact of, I mean, she's grown up without a dad. She's grown up without a father. It's one of those things where, yeah, I could get hung up with, it's not right, it's not fair, but it happened. And you have to try not to rationalize it and understand it, but you have to just accept it. I guess you go through the five stages of grief or loss or whatever, but you just got to learn how to go through those a little bit quicker and get to that acceptance phase, because you can't rationalize everything. If I could rationalize everything, then I would know everything. You know, I'd know exactly when and how, detail for detail, the entire universe was created if I could rationalize everything. But that's not up to us. That's up to God.
So again, what advice do you give anybody? They're not able to cope. Their cup's running over. They're on the edge. Maybe they feel hopeless. The men, the women. I say guys. I'm talking about that brotherhood, mm-hmm. sisterhood. What would you advise somebody to do?
In the famous words of two different lieutenants now, don't be an idiot. You can't handle everything on your own. It's impossible. And that's not really talking about going to your spouses or going to your family and telling your family, because they're not going to understand. And yes, in the engine house or at the, you know, police station or at the base or at the hospital, you know, we sit there and we talk about the stuff and we kind of partially unpack it there. But that is still not the same as talking to a professional, whether that be a pastor or someone who specializes in hearing this kind of stuff. You know, the guy I go to, who's a, you know, he specializes in PTSD related counseling. He hears all sorts of other stories from firefighters. So I know he's heard these stories Not necessarily that he can relate because he hasn't been there, but at least he's heard these stories. And I know it's like a, you know, whatever. I'm not going to get judged for say some jacked up stuff in the middle of my session. Talk to somebody. You're not, you know, you're not a god. There's only one of those. And he's the one that you need to ask for help from, truthfully. And if that isn't your thing, then go talk to somebody. You know, I know that without God, that I wouldn't have any of the strength that I have, you know, for any of the things that I do. You know, you may think that it's not affecting you, but it's absolutely affecting you. And you may think that since you're not having bad dreams or you're not, you know, you may think that everything's fine, but maybe listen to your spouses and your family. You should probably start looking at it and say, you know what, maybe I need to go unpack some stuff. That's what I would say.
That's good. Well, thanks, Russ. Appreciate it.
Anytime.
The reality of the job. When your cup runs over. A storyline extra. Part two of my interview with my own son, firefighter Thomas Mann Jr. Let me get real for a moment. I needed help. Almost 10 years after I stopped my work with the fire service, dreams, uncontrolled anxiety, stress, reliving situations, insomnia, and a trip or two to the ER for chest pains, heart cath, that's kind of how it went. I couldn't even enjoy the good things in life, but I found a good counselor who worked with first responders. That counselor helped me unpack some things I had no idea were bothering me. It was so worth it. So this is my advice. If you need help, as my son said, don't be stupid. Get help. Check with your fire department or fire union. If you can't find help there, there are some great online resources, like one of them, the All Clear Foundation. That's allclearfoundation.org. Great resources. And there are many more. Whether you are on the job or you're retired, as my wife, a nurse with ER and ICU experience, reminds me often, when in doubt, check it out. One of the reasons I produce this podcast is to share stories, and those stories let you know that you are not alone. Your job literally makes a difference in our community. We need you to be healthy and strong physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. So be proactive. That's my advice. Hopefully this has been helpful, and hopefully it starts the conversation. I want to remind you to be sure to check out our website, emergencyfd.com. That's emergencyfd.com. And while you're there, help support the production of this podcast with a donation of any amount. Sure would be appreciated. And be sure to subscribe and follow to be notified when our next podcast is available. If you would like to contact Emergency FD Storyline with comments or suggest a story or subject for an upcoming podcast, email us, storyline@emergencyfd.com. That's storyline@emergencyfd.com. I'm Tom Mann, and I want to thank you for listening. There are many stories coming on Emergency FD Storyline. Don't miss it.